It's 2 o'clock, and this is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, December 5th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, Raise a Glass, Today Marks 85th Anniversary of Prohibition Ending, by Tony Lisi. Decatur, 85 years after the states ratified the 21st Amendment, Jim Chiligris still can recite the stories he heard when he was the owner of the Lincoln Square Lounge about how Prohibition-era Decatur hosted backroom gambling rooms, speakeasies, and brothels. There was a motor inn south of Decatur called the Shady Rest that was the best-known speakeasy in town, Chiligris, 79, said. That was probably the main place that people talked about a lot. Today marks the anniversary of the day that Prohibition was officially repealed. On December 5, 1993, Utah became the 36th state to ratify the amendment and end a ban on the manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquors for beverage dating back 14 years. During that time, the ban on booze created an underground industry. Before Chiligris took over the lounge himself, he helped his father, Angelo Chiligris, there as a kid, and listened to the lore from old-timers on the days when Decatur, like everywhere else in the U.S., was dry. There was a lot of hardship in those days, but those that were working and had a little bit of money had a good time, he said. Now his nephew, Andrew Chiligris, owns the Lincoln Square Lounge, along with several historic downtown buildings that were previously home to illegal activity. Decatur was very industrial back then. You had a railroad and coal mines and manufacturing, the younger Chiligris said. These guys needed an outlet. That was a rough time. From the handed-down memories, Jim Chiligris painted a picture of a lively downtown full of workers and their families looking to unwind at the above-board pool halls and restaurants. Below the illicit gambling parlors on the higher floors of buildings near Lincoln Square, the former home of the transfer house. There were a bunch of places downtown that had gambling going on, Chiligris said. Family lore also holds that Angelo secured the third liquor license issued by the state of Illinois in 1934, months after Prohibition was officially lifted. The Lincoln Square Tavern, as it was called at the time, became the first Decatur business to sell alcohol again. But Chiligris said the license was lost when the lounge suffered a fire in 1960. The cultural movement that led to Prohibition stretches back before states ratified the 18th Amendment in 1919 that led to banning alcohol sales across the country. Decatur was no stranger to the active temperance movement, which advocated for moral purity and the elimination of alcohol in American society. According to Nathan Pierce, executive director of the Macon County History Museum, Decatur Township voters elected to go dry as early as 1909 through a local option law from the state that allowed voters to decide on the local level whether to ban alcohol. But Decatur residents seesawed on the issue. 2 years later, voters favored to allow saloons to sell alcohol, but then in 1914, after Illinois women gained the right to vote, Decatur Township voted again to go dry. Indeed, across the country, women's groups led the charge in the temperance movement that eventually produced the 18th Amendment. In Pierce's research, he found several temperance groups were active in Decatur in the lead-up to Prohibition. The National Anti-Saloon League worked with the Home Protective League in Decatur to bring a suit against the Decatur Brewing Company, he said. The suit took place in 1908, where the Decatur brewers were accused that a product called White Banner, a sort of non-alcoholic beer, violated the local ban on malt liquors. One common theme was religion was very much tied in with the temperance movement and making areas dry, Pierce said. Billy Sunday, one of the most famous evangelical preachers of the time, visited Decatur in 1908 to find converts to the temperance movement. One dramatic event of prohibition in Decatur came in 1931 when a gambling room proprietor, Jerry Manuel, in the upstairs of a South Main Street building, now the parking lot next to the Decatur Stanley's mural, found a bomb in the building stairway. He threw the bomb out the window, and it blew his hand up, Childress said. Years later, Manuel was one of the old-timers in Decatur that passed stories of bootleggers and gambling room operators that made their mark on the city in a different era. But it's easy to romanticize the times, even with all the vice that came with it. Childress warned Decatur was probably not as infused with moonshine and gangsters that big cities like Chicago and New York became famous for. I don't think there was very much drinking going on, as people thought there was, Childress said. People were allowed to make their own beer at home, and law enforcement in Decatur still made busts on a regular basis. Decatur police were really tight on it, Childress said, of the Prohibition days. In fact, every once in a while, the newspapers would have a thing about so-and-so sheriff destroyed so many slot machines. Today, December 5th, has become known as Repeal Day, but the history of that era lives on in some Decatur buildings. The next article is about community. New Decatur Teen Center impresses. Boys and Girls Club facility offers youth a safe place. By Claire Hettinger. Decatur. The new teen center at the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur got rave reviews from the first three teenagers who saw it. The eyes of Quintera Young, 18, Dylan Phillips, 15, and Kadreje Strong, 16, lit up as they took in the center. They saw pool tables, flat-screen HD TVs, couches, and high-rise tables. They stood on a floor painted with the club's colors, blue, black, gray, and white. Inside the teen center are a loft, gaming and TV area, and an open space with a pool table and basketball hoop game. The walls were decorated with murals stating inspirational goals such as be brave, be great, or academic success. The new facility was financed with $710,000 from former Macon County Sheriff Howard G. Buffett's private foundation. Buffett had previously said he was providing the money because the club makes a big impact and needs the resources to do important work for the community. But most of all, the teens were excited for a place to call their own. They are excited for a place to do homework, play games, and just relax, Strong said. If the Boys and Girls Club is not fun, it's not going to make the teens come, Strong said. But we have our own center, and we have our stuff in here. The Teen Center is an effort to keep young people out of trouble and off the streets, Executive Director Bruce Jeffrey said. Jeffrey began discussions about a teen center with community leaders in the summer of 2017, following several incidents of violence that involved children and young people. The Boys and Girls donation came after Jeffrey began discussions with community leaders following the shooting of a 12-year-old boy in a home on May 17, 2017. Eventually, that led to Buffett. When children are exposed to have to deal with gun violence, that is a real issue in our community, he said in a Herald and Review story when the donation for the center was announced in September 2017. Founded in 1972, the club serves more than 100 children and offers various programs for youth ages 7 to 17, with an emphasis on education, career, health, life skills, and sports. The new teen center will be geared to those 13 and older. The nonprofit and organization was operated out of the 15,000 square foot North Jasper Street building since 1983. It moved there from a building in the 800 block of East Leafland Avenue. The trio of teens was so excited by what they saw that they planned to encourage other teens to join them at the club, Strong said. All three want to recruit other people and friends to get them to come to enjoy the space, Strong said. All three of us want to recruit other people and friends to get them to come to enjoy the space, Strong said. Young people attending the club in recent years, but she said she plans, stopped attending, I'm sorry. She plans to go back now that the teen center is open. She said she is most excited for a place for the teens to hang out away from the little kids at the center. We were all in the same room before, and we all got treated like little kids, Young said. Phillips said he is looking forward to a place to play basketball and other games away from the little kids. The outdoor basketball hoop is next to the teen center. It's great, he said. It's a good place to get out of the house and hang out with my friends. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said that the teen center will be an asset to the community. On behalf of the City Council and the people of Decatur, I want to give a personal thank you to Sheriff Howard Buffett because he answered the call, Moore Wolf said. Sheriff Buffett, you've changed a lot of lives. Buffett did not want to speak Tuesday, but he did offer one self-depreciating observation. I'm so old, I don't remember what it was like to be a teenager, he said. Jeffrey thanked the community for its support for the project. He said the hundreds of kids who walk through the door of the club every day will feel the support and will feel cared for. He said Buffett's donation made all the changes possible. The club also got new floors throughout the entire building, new vans, and new air conditioning. Membership for the club is $1, said Jeffrey. And Jeffrey said he wants to encourage all young people to join. Right now, there are 150 teens registered at the club. Jeffrey said he hopes to raise that to more than 300. Our goal of the Teen Center is to reach kids who are on the verge of making bad decisions, such as criminal activity or dropping out of school. And Jeffrey said the Teen Center will keep kids coming back to the club instead of looking for a place to belong somewhere else. I do believe we can impact and change some of the kids who are right there on the edge, he said. And the kids who are already on track, they can say, this is why I want to stay with the program. Jeffrey said he understands that there is a perception in the public about the club being a place for struggling youth are little kids, but he wants to change this, and he thinks the teen center will help. I just really felt that we needed something different, something new, he said, something where they don't have to feel like they are being babied when they come to the Boys and Girls Club. Jonathan Fluker, program director, said he thinks the center will give teens a safe place to go. Fluker said he attended recent community meetings looking for solutions to violence in the community and a way to keep kids safe. People ask what the solutions are, and I think this is one of the solutions, he said. He also said he thinks the teen center will benefit not only the club and the young people, but the community as well. I am happy for the club. I am happy for the community, he said. This will make a difference for years to come. Special prosecutor requested. Legal opinion sought for sheriff's office. Decatur, by Ryan Boyles. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott has asked the Illinois Attorney General's office to appoint a special prosecutor to provide legal advice regarding the fallout from the sheriff's election. The petition for the appointment of a special prosecutor comes a day after the Macon County Republican Party sent a letter to the Macon County Clerk's Office requesting the clerk, the local election authority, to reverse the results of the November 6th election that saw Democrat Tony Brown defeat Republican Jim Root by a single vote, 19,655 to 19,654. Republican officials point to two uncounted ballots, both for Root, that should have been counted by November 20th when provisional and mail-in ballots were added to the overall total. If they had both been counted, then Republicans argue Root, not Brown, would currently be sheriff. Root had held a 99-vote advantage when the votes were counted on Election Day, November 6th. Brown and Root are both lieutenants in the sheriff's department. Root said Monday he will not be commenting on the matter for the time being. Brown, who began his duties as sheriff on Saturday, said after Monday's county board meeting that he viewed the election results as final and will continue as sheriff unless a court tells him otherwise. In a filing provided to the Herald and Review by State's Attorney Jay Scott, the county argues that appointing a special prosecutor would prevent any conflict of interest or appearance of impropriety regarding the matter. Local and state officials have previously said it would be up to the court to change the results of the election. But the Republican request cites a part of the Illinois Election Code that covers how ballots are retabulated as evidence for why the results should be reversed without the need for a court order. Scott said Tuesday that his office has already been in contact with the Illinois Attorney General's office, but the petition was a formal way to have outside legal counsel weigh in. We'll let someone independent come in and make the decision, Scott said, adding he did not know how long it may take for a special prosecutor to be appointed. Macon County Republican Party Chairman Bruce Filsbury said he applauded Scott's decision and looked forward to a resolution. This is new to everyone, and I think we got a pretty strong case, but we'll leave it to the proper authorities on how it's handled, Filsbury said. Macon County Democratic Party Chairman Jim Underwood did not return a message seeking comment. Low gasoline prices, early gift to drivers, by Kevin Barlow. Decatur. Talk about an early Christmas gift, for now. Plummeting fuel prices have sent the average cost of a gallon of regular unleaded gas in Decatur to $2.25 Tuesday, 39 cents lower than this time last month, according to AAA. Compare that to the all-time high back in June 2013 of $4.18 a gallon. What's driving the drop? A huge surge in domestic production of oil and gasoline played a part. Domestic crude oil production remains at a record high, 11.7 million barrels per day. That's 21% more than last year. And there was a deep dive in the price crude oil to near $50 a barrel. Plummeting oil prices have made gasoline far less expensive to produce, said AAA spokesman Mark Jenkins. Oil prices sank to a 14-month low because there's so much oil in the global market and not enough demand to absorb it. That means motorists in 32 states are paying less to fill up compared to 2017. Statewide, there was a 41% drop in the past month to an average of $2.36 a gallon, with some central Illinois stations going much lower. On Tuesday, the Marathon station on East Pershing Road in Decatur was selling for $2.09 a gallon, for example. Jim Arundel of Hayworth paid $2.16 per gallon at Casey's in Bloomington. "It's more money in my pocket, and that's a good thing," he said. "Nobody is complaining right now about the gas prices, so I give credit to President Donald Trump. Good things happen when people are working and the economy is rolling." Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis for GasBuddy, which surveys fuel prices nationwide as well, said at least one gas station in 27 states is offering a gallon of gasoline at $1.99 per gallon or less. He estimated that the 2018 drop in prices has kept nearly $200 million in the pockets of Americans every single day, acting as an economic stimulus ahead of the holidays. But there may be trouble ahead. Jenkins warned that OPEC and Russia this week are meeting to discuss cutting production, which could lead to a spike in prices if that happens. The meeting is Tuesday in Vienna. Crude prices began falling in October and continued to plunge last month due to oversupply and fears that weaker global economic growth could dampen energy demand. Trump blamed OPEC and Saudi Arabia early this year for high oil prices. When U.S. crude skidded to $54 on November 21st, he tweeted, "Thank you to Saudi Arabia, but let's go lower." DeHaan estimated that Americans will likely see falling prices at least for one more week. After that, and before the Christmas rush, prices may climb again. "The promise of a trade deal with China may boost confidence in the economy," he said, pushing global oil demand back up and driving prices higher. The Orlando Sentinel and Associated Press contributed to this report. By the numbers, 2.46, average cost in dollars for a gallon of gas nationwide as of Monday, the lowest of the year. 31 cents drop per gallon over the past month nationwide. Cents drop per gallon over the past month in Illinois to an average $2.36. 32. States where motorists are paying less to fill up compared to a year ago. And the source of that information was AAA. Police: suspects threaten to kill child. By Tony Reed. Decatur. Armed teens shoved a gun inside the mouth of a young boy and threatened to execute him unless the child's grandfather told them where they could find money and weapons during a home invasion, a sworn police affidavit said. The group of four teens, ranging from 19 to 16, were given the keys to a safe and, after ransacking the house in the 400 block of North 33rd Street the night of November 20th, fled with four guns and more than $1,600 in cash. But they dashed outside and straight into the waiting arms, of a team of arriving police. Decatur police officers, who had been following their trail from two earlier armed home invasions, reported earlier the same night. Previous sworn affidavits have detailed home invasion police said were committed by defendants Rahiam A. Shabazz and Dondrian L. Austin, both 18, with 19-year-old Byron D. Theus and a 16-year-old juvenile. Harrowing new details of the crime on North 33rd Street have emerged with a new affidavit alleging the involvement of a fifth member of the armed group, Raymond D. Graham, 24. He avoided capture with the rest the night of November 20th, and police finally found and arrested him 2:30 a.m. Tuesday. Like the others involved, Graham now faces three sets of preliminary charges of armed robbery, home invasion, and aggravated battery after homes were entered and victims beaten and robbed at gunpoint, which are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Police said the first crime was committed at 7:40 p.m. in the 400 block of Shadow Lane, where a man was hit in the head with a gun butt, and his wife was clubbed to the ground as she tried to flee. They struck again 15 minutes later, police said, in the 1800 block of North Summit Avenue, before reaching the North 33rd Street home just before 10 p.m. The affidavit said Graham kept watch outside, which was how he was able to get away when police showed up, while the others burst their way inside at gunpoint. Another man living in the house had been forced to let them in, and Decatur Police said Officer Adam Schiefman said the child's grandfather fought back when two gunmen walked into his living room. He stated he tackled one of them and grabbed the barrel of the handgun from the other male was holding, Schiefman said. That gunman fell over but started yelling for help, which is when a third gunman entered the room and clubbed the grandfather over the head with a handgun, knocking him to the floor. Then all three began kicking him, Schiefman said in the affidavit. He, the grandfather, advised he lay on the floor and kept telling the men not to hurt his grandson, who was sleeping in a bedroom on the southwest side of the residence, Schiefman added. That was when the teens went and grabbed the terrified child, who was younger than 10, and threatened him with death unless they got what they wanted, Schiefman said. Raymond was being held Tuesday night, along with the others, in the Macon County Jail. His bond is set at $500,000. The juvenile involved was petitioned to court and was being held at a juvenile detention facility. Man Caught Passing Fake $100 Bills by Tony Reed. Forsyth. Police said a man who passed a fake $100 bill at a Forsyth gas station handed over eight more $100 bills when confronted and told the cashier to keep them if they were fake. A sworn affidavit from the Macon County Sheriff's Office said they all proved to be bogus, and the 30-year-old man was arrested Saturday morning. He was booked on a preliminary charge of forgery, which is subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Writing in the affidavit, Deputy Jennifer Harris said the first $100 note was passed about 10 p.m. November 24th at Casey's General Store at 111 East Cox Street in Forsyth. The man had bought a pack of cigarettes for $8.23 and gotten $91.77 in change. Harris said the bill was quickly discovered to be counterfeit, and the man was called on it when he came back at 1 a.m. November 25th, prompting him to offer the other eight fake bills. He gave his real name when asked, and Harris said the man, who had prior arrests for retail theft and credit card fraud, was eventually identified, found, and arrested. He was freed from the Macon County Jail after posting $5,000 bond. Bail conditions ordered him to stay away from all Casey's businesses. And that's the end of part one of the Wednesday, December 5th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. This has been Captain Rick reporting. I'll be back with part two after the break.